Time now for the Brian Barrett Show on EEI.
And that's it. The Buccaneers improved to 5-1 on the season. They get it done in the city of brotherly love. 28-22, the final, Tampa Bay.
All right, welcome in. So how about that? Tom Brady, another win. The Bucs move to now 5-1 on the season as they beat the Eagles 28-22. And quite frankly, this wasn't even one of Brady's better games of the year. In fact, you can make a real convincing argument, and I would, that this was his second worst game of the year. His worst game was in New England, of course, in Foxborough a couple of weeks back. And then this one tonight, he wasn't very sharp. He had an interception, could have had another, although that one really wasn't his fault, but he could have had another interception in this game. He goes 34 for 42, 297. And his statistics are going to come down after tonight. That's how good Brady's been this season, because he entered this game tonight averaging 353 passing yards with 15 touchdowns and two interceptions. Now, of course, he goes up to 17 touchdowns on the season and just the three interceptions. He entered tonight with a 108.5 quarterback rating. And here's the thing that I don't want to say it irritates me, because now I believe I've come to grips with the fact that Brady's playing for a different organization. But the fact that Bill let it get to this point, where my biggest indictment or my biggest critique of Bill in letting Tom Brady go, because as we're seeing him, in all likelihood, he's going to finish in the top three in the MVP voting. We'll see as the season goes on. But right now, he's the front runner. Kyler Murray's in the conversation and Justin Herbert's in the conversation. Those are the three guys right now. Mahomes is not having a great season for him, and his team is 2-3. These are the three guys who are going to be competing for the MVP. But I feel like the most embarrassing part for Bill, or the worst part about this for Bill, is he couldn't get a proper evaluation of what Tom Brady was in 2019, right? Because his roster, besides the 1 week of having Antonio Brown, his roster was so bad during that 2019 season that Bill Belichick couldn't realize, oh yeah, Tom's still got more left in the tank, right? Because even I'll admit, like when I was watching Tom in 2019 and he's coming to the podium, he's saying I'm the most, what, miserable 8-0 quarterback of all time. I'm thinking maybe he is done. Maybe he is getting close to the end. And maybe he's not the same player that he once was. But he goes to Tampa Bay. And really, after that bye week they had last year, they're steamrolling teams. I mean, they've lost two games since that bye week, right? Excuse me, they've lost one game since that bye week. And it was a couple of weeks ago to the Rams, one of the other heavyweights, if you will, in the NFC. That's how good Tom Brady's been since he went there. And now I'm wondering this, like, I look at that Buccaneers team and I'm thinking, okay, well, maybe Bill's idea is, hey, I don't want this thing to fall apart, right? Like, after Brady leaves, I don't want to go all in for the next couple of years. And then when Tom exits, then we're left with nothing and the team stinks and the roster is not good anymore. Well, you could say the same thing about the Buccaneers, right? I mean, they are all in with the next 2 years with Tom Brady and company. But what's stopping them from eventually saying, oh, yeah, the next disgruntled quarterback, if you will, come play for us because we got Godwin, we have Mike Evans, we have O.J. Howard, right? They could do that where they could say, oh, yeah, Russell Wilson's done in Seattle. He wants to get out of there. They could go into the Russell Wilson market. And the whole idea of the Patriots going all in with Brady that Belichick was telling us at the end of the Brady era, if you will. Well, look at where the Patriots are at right now. They're 2-3. Do you think the roster is really good right now? Like, this whole idea of moving on from Tom Brady because you couldn't keep holding on to Brady and hoping that the roster was going to continue to stay at the level it once was. Well, it was already disintegrating when Brady was at the end. And has the roster really improved? Belichick went out in free agency. He spent all this money. Jonnu Smith has absolutely sucked. I thought that he was actually going to be a good player. I liked the signing, right? The idea there was, okay, he's going to be more productive when he comes to the Patriots. He was the fourth option, really. I guess if you count just receiving entities, if you will, he was the third option in Tennessee last year behind A.J. Brown and Corey Davis. And you had Derrick Henry out of the backfield, although not much of a receiver. But you get the point. You felt like, okay, some of the numbers tell you that he could actually have a better year here and he could put up some big numbers, but he can't. We've seen it over the, what, first 4 weeks of the season. He hasn't been dependable. And now if you look at the game plan last week against the Texans, who they're throwing the ball to more is Hunter Henry. Now, Hunter Henry's a good player. He's a solid player. I thought that was a good signing at the time. I thought he'd be solid for this team. That's what he was with the Chargers, and that's what he's been for the Patriots. But now he essentially is your number one weapon, right? It's him and Jacoby Myers, which now you look at this roster. Yeah, Matthew Judon was a nice signing. But other than that, you look at this free agency period, if you will, for Bill. Which signing has really hit outside of Matthew Judon? Nelson Agholor, that has not been good. Kendrick Bourne's been fine as like a third or a fourth option. But what are those? Which one of those signings really worked? Trent Brown hasn't played, but this is a guy that has struggled with injuries throughout his entire career. He's always hurt. We saw this. He is always hurt. Outside of his 1 year here with the Patriots, this guy has always been hurt throughout his NFL career. Look at his time with the Raiders. Always hurt when he was there. So I just look at this free agency thing that everybody was so excited about. Hunter Henry's been pretty good. I mean, it's not like he is living up to the contract that he got, but I get it. You're in free agency. You have to overpay. So I guess that's been a hit thus far. But remember, we're very early into that contract. Agholor has not been a good deal, and Jonnu Smith has not been a good deal. Now, I would admit that Matthew Judon's been tremendous. If this team was better, he'd be in the conversation for the Defensive Player of the Year. But the problem is this team hasn't been better. And the most aggravating thing I would say so far about this season for the Patriots is the stuff that they're ordinarily good at, they're bad at. Situational football, right? You can go all the way back to week one when this started. Miami scores a touchdown in their first drive of the game. They come out of halftime and they do the same damn thing. Same thing can be said about what transpired with the New Orleans Saints out of halftime, right? And critical turnovers for the Patriots. We've seen that happen all season long. We've seen the fumbles with a guy like Damian Harris. We saw Jonnu Smith basically toss the ball up to Malcolm Jenkins. So this stuff that the Patriots used to be so good at, they're not good at anymore. And that's the thing that is really tough. And you look at this game coming up against the Cowboys, I look at it and I know you can look at their defense this year and say, hey, they're turning people over left and right, which is a good thing. And then you look at some of the speed they have out there defensively. They've had a really good season defensively based on where they were last year. Everybody thought that was the worst defense in the NFL, and they've responded. Now, their offense has been incredible this year with Dak Prescott, although I don't know why Amari Cooper is coming out after a win over the Giants saying this is a Super Bowl team. First of all, you never won a Super Bowl. How would you know what a Super Bowl team looks like? And secondly, you beat the New York Giants. Congratulations, they're one of the worst teams in the NFL. But you get the point that their offense right now is absolutely flying. And I just look at this game on paper. If you're going to win this game, what you're going to need is a vintage Bill Belichick performance, right? He's going to have to do what he did to Dak or do to Dak Prescott in that Cowboys offense, what he did to Tom Brady and the Buccaneers. And I give Bill credit for that. I mean, he came up with an outstanding game plan against the Buccaneers, although his in-game coaching, his in-game decision-making, so to speak, sucked. I mean, he should have never kicked that field goal. Even if you kick it, you give the ball back to Brady with 2 minutes remaining. So that was a dumb decision in the game, but his game planning was good. So you're going to have to do something similar for this Cowboys team. And Kellen Moore, the offensive coordinator, he's got it going. They got all kinds of things they like to do offensively. They got all the weapons in the world, and now they're getting their running game going. Now that their line is at least relatively healthy, with Smith back healthy this year and Zach Martin back healthy this year, like, that is a really tough opponent to go up against. And this whole idea that we had, it's funny, like the whole idea we had about the Patriots entering the season was they were going to be what? Great defense, ball control offense, run the football. They can't run the football whatsoever. So that's where the Patriots find themselves in right now. I would contend that if they're going to make a playoff push, if they're going to at least be competitive and playing games down the stretch of the season where they have an opportunity to put themselves at least in a position to try to make the playoffs in, say, week 14, 15, 16, and 17, or I guess week 18, right? There's a week 18 now because we have an extra game. So if you get to that point, you need to win this game against the Cowboys, because then you got the Jets and you can feel really good about yourself, right? I still feel like they need that big win. They don't have that big win yet, and this is the opportunity to do it this week against the Cowboys. All right, but anyway, and if you want to weigh in on the Brady game tonight or the Patriots, certainly welcome to do so at 617-779-7937. But I want to transition to the Red Sox because they're the biggest story in town right now. They're four wins away from going to a World Series. And think about this for a second. Now, Mookie's having an outstanding game tonight for the Dodgers. He has three hits. He has a stolen base. He scored their only run of the game on a Corey Seager double. So he's having an outstanding game. But think about this. Less than 2 years ago, this team traded Mookie Betts, who was a former MVP in 2018. And they're already back in the ALCS. It was less than 2 years ago. They traded him right before the COVID season in 2020, and they're already back in the ALCS. It's just been an amazing turnaround. I think one of the things we have to acknowledge with Chaim Bloom is this. Clearly, he's building this thing the right way, right? He talked about, and they've talked about it multiple times, as has John Henry, sustained success with this organization, right? That's what they want to do. So they had one bad year. And now, in the second year of the Bloom era, so to speak, they're in the American League Championship Series. So, yeah, that rebuild was really tough to go through, right? 2 months. That's what the rebuild was. It was 2 months of crap, and it was all worth it. Because you know what else the Red Sox got out of that year last year? First of all, J.D. Martinez did not opt out of his contract because he was horrible without the video in 2020. So that's one thing the Red Sox got. Here's another thing the Red Sox got. Because they were so bad, hey, they were worse than the Orioles. They got the fourth overall pick in the draft, and guess what? They got Marcelo Mayer, who was considered to be the best prospect coming out of that draft. And because of all that, and you look at some of the moves that Chaim Bloom has made, their farm system has jumped from 20th in baseball, according to Baseball America, all the way up to 9. So they are rebuilding the farm system on the fly, and in the process, they have made it all the way to the ALCS, which brings me to the decision that Alex Cora made today, which is, and I did not see this coming whatsoever, I felt that they would start Sale in game 2 just because of the fact that it's very difficult if Sale doesn't go deep into the game to have him start on that game on Monday, because then you have 2 games after that, right? You play Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So there's no way you could start Sale on Monday if he goes short in that outing. So I felt that he would start game 2. I did not envision he would start in game 1 because you figure, okay, let's give the ball to Nathan Eovaldi, who has been the ace of the staff. But I understand the justification for him going with Sale in game 1 because of the fact that, okay, then you can use Houck and then you can use Pivetta, right? And if Pivetta is going to start game 4, if he piggybacks Chris Sale in game 1, then he will be good to go in game 4. And we don't know who's going to start in game 3 and 4 yet, but in all likelihood, you would think it would be Pivetta. I mean, that's what you would think at this particular point in time. And then you would have Houck available to go on Monday as well. And even if Houck goes in, say, an inning or so after Nathan Eovaldi, if Houck goes just one inning after Nate, and the idea with Nate going to game 2 is you don't have to go to one of those long relievers. And if you do, it's just for, say, hypothetically, a one-inning scenario, like giving Houck an inning, and then that means that he can piggyback Erod on that game 3, which would be on Monday. So I totally understand where Cora is going from this, and Sale's going to get 2 starts, you would think, and apparently he's been working really hard on his stuff in between starts. But I want to get to Alex Cora, who made an interesting comparison to Chris Sale starting in game 1.
You guys are human beings. What do you think this means to him with all that he's been through and everything else? He's got
pretty similar to David Price against, you know, he struggled against New York, right, in 2018, and we gave him the ball against the Astros. It just happened that it was game 2, I think it was, right? But, you know, these guys, they work so hard at the craft that sometimes, you know, people forget that, yeah, they're still good, you know. You're going to have good days, you're going to have bad days. And, you know, hopefully for us, you know, the struggles against the Rays, obviously we're not going to face them this year, so that's in the past. We're working with him, you know, throughout all this time to make him better, and he feels great. So, you know, we'll give him the ball tomorrow and see where he takes us.
All right, it is interesting. I almost felt like the Erod start was more similar to David Price in 18 because, and look, Chris Sale has a horrible postseason resume. I don't want to give you the numbers because they're scary. They're going to make you worry about tomorrow. But anyway, with Erod, he had that horrible outing in game 1 in game 1, and then he comes back in game 5, and I felt like, okay, the pressure, or in game 4, rather, I felt like kind of the pressure is going to be off Erod. The expectations were at their lowest with Erod, right? So you were going out there, and it's like, hey, if I pitch poorly, everybody's still going to be pissed off at me. So the only thing I could do is change the opinion of people in town, right? So he goes out there, and he actually throws the ball really well. And that reminded me of Price, right? Because Price, he went on short rest in that game 4, or rather in that game 5 against the Astros in the ALCS back in 18, and he was on short rest. So even if he performed poorly in that particular outing, I quite frankly, and I know everybody was at that point done with Price, but even if Price went out there and he pitched poorly, I don't think the fan base could have held it against him because he was going up against Verlander on 3 days rest, right? He had to fill in for Chris Sale, who at that particular point in time was dealing with a stomach virus. So I think that's the more similar comparison, but I do get it. And apparently Chris Sale's been working hard in between starts and all that. Can we even call that a start that he made last time? He pitched an inning. Here's what Chris Sale had to say about Cora giving him the ball.
Chris, just the way, you know, the way things have gone for your last couple times out there, you know, what did it mean for Alex to kind of show that confidence in you, even though, you know, you obviously weren't feeling your best the last couple times on the mound?
Yeah, this says a lot about him, you know, and his trust in me. You know, I appreciate that. I don't take that lightly. You know, there's no hiding from it. It's no secret. You know, I haven't been absolutely horrible. Probably my 2 worst starts of my career back to back, right leading up to this. So, you know, I know what I had to do in between. You know, I had a job to do, and I knew that I had work to get in. You know, obviously following my last start in Tampa, I mean, I got off the mound every single day because I knew I had to get something going if we were going to be successful, and I know that I'm going to be a part of that. So, you know, just trying to iron out some kinks, get back into, you know, a good rhythm and find it and just ride it out as long as I can.
Okay, so that was Chris Sale, and it makes a lot of sense for Core to go in this direction in terms of going with Chris Sale over Nathan Eovaldi, because Sale is not going to be long for this outing, which means you can go to the weapons, the Hugs, the Pavettas, right? So don't panic that Chris Sale's starting based on his last two performances. It's not going to happen again to the point where it gets out of control. Core is going to go to the bullpen really quick. He is going to have a really quick hook with Chris Sale. In fact, he joked with him after his press conference today. He said, "What's up, opener?" Calling him the opener, like, you know, these bullpen games. But anyway, this has got to be personal for Sale. He did talk about his changeup. Well, we can get into that in greater detail throughout the series and after the game tomorrow night. But opponents hitting 450, they're slugging 650. Right now, he doesn't have a changeup. That's an issue for Chris Sale that he's got to figure out. He's got to have his command, which he hasn't over the past couple of outings, the Nationals outing and the Rays outing. But here's the thing in terms of, I say this is personal. In 17 in the postseason, the Astros lit him up. Game one, 5 innings, 7 earned on 9 hits, gave up 3 home runs, Bregman and Altuve, and then Altuve again. So Altuve took him deep twice in that game, and Bregman took him deep as well. Then he came out of the pen in game four after Rick Porcello. He took the loss. He gave up 2 earned in 4 2/3. And remember, the Red Sox had a chance to force a game five. Benintendi gave the Sox a 3-2 lead in that one. And then in the top of the eighth, Bregman took Sale deep. And then Farrell went to the pen for Kimbrel, and the rest is history. In 18, the season the Red Sox won the World Series. He lasted just 4 innings in that game one. He gave up 2 earned, was coming back from a shoulder issue. Then he had the stomach virus, gave up a 2-run single to Springer. The Sox lost that game 7-2. So he has been really bad against the Astros. This is an opportunity tomorrow to kind of exercise his demons, if you will, against a really good offense, which it's scary. They absolutely clobber left-handed pitchers. And of course, we all know that Sale has struggled against this team in the past. Now, I'm here to bring some good news about who the Red Sox are going up against. Not in terms of the lineup, because that is absolutely devastating, as you all know. But it is worth mentioning these pitchers that we saw dominate the Red Sox both at Fenway and Minute Maid Park. So the guy that gets the ball tomorrow is Framber Valdez. And you may remember how much he dominated the Red Sox this season. In 2 games against the Sox, 7 1/3, he allowed just 1 earned run. He had 8 strikeouts, 5 hits. That was on June 8th. So 7 1/3, 1 earned, 8 strikeouts. The other start he had, he went 7. He allowed just 1 earned run with 10 strikeouts, 5 hits in that one. So in total, 14 1/3, 189 opponent's batting average, and a 126 ERA. He absolutely dominated the Red Sox. But here's the thing. Something fishy was going on with Framber Valdez. So remember the whole crackdown on the sticky stuff in Major League Baseball? So,
the sticky things.
Yeah, the sticky things. Who was that? Martin Perez? Yeah, good job, Justin, who's producing. So worth noting this. The crackdown, both his outings came prior to the crackdown. From April to June 20th, before the crackdown, Valdez had a 167 ERA, a 193 opponent's batting average, a .99 whip, and he struck out 22.1% of batters. Okay, from June 21st until the end of the season, his ERA 361. Remember, previously it was at 167. It was at 361. His opponent's batting average went to 227. His whip went to 133. So he went from being an absolutely dominating pitcher to a guy that is still serviceable in his staff, and still the numbers are relatively good, although the whip's a little bit below average. The opponent's batting average, 227. It's fine, 361 ERA, fine, but it's not 167 with a 193 opponent's batting average and a .99 whip. So he legitimately went from one of the best pitchers in the sport for the first couple of months of the season to a guy that was clearly exposed without the sticky stuff. I like the Sox in the series for this reason. The lineup is absolutely cruising right now. It has got to be the most difficult lineup to pitch to in all of Major League Baseball. It's either this one or the Astros on the other side. I feel like Core is going to get enough out of these long relievers. And the thing about the Astros is this. They don't have those type of pitchers. They don't have long relievers like Houck and like Pivetta has turned into over the past couple of weeks. They don't have that type of personnel on their staff. I like the Red Sox to win this one at Slugfest. I'll say the Sox in 6. They finish it off at Minute Maid Park. I cannot wait. Cannot wait for this series. Thanks to Justin for producing. I'll be back with you after the game tomorrow night. Have a great night, everybody. Be safe and be well.